You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Mary Kate McCoy with a story about the power of preparing a good meal.
Writer Crystal Chan loves to cook. During the pandemic, she traveled home often, enjoying long stays with her parents. To show her gratitude, she would cook delicious and comforting dishes for family dinner. She shares a story celebrating the labor of love that goes into making a great pot of stew.
A little while ago, when I was visiting my parents in Wisconsin, I found an old cookbook that I had purchased in France. I've been visiting my parents as an extended guest throughout COVID, journeying back and forth between Oshkosh and Chicago. Gratefully, my parents welcomed my ping-ponging across the state line with open arms. Come, stay as long as you'd like. Leave whenever you wish. I love cooking, and I quickly found that making home-cooked meals for my parents elicited oohs and ahs, and my stepdad's famous understated way of declaring that he loved a dish. He would say, "I could eat that again." Cooking was a very excellent way to express my gratitude. So I took that French cookbook and found a recipe for beef bourguignon. The next day, I made the pot of deep simmering broth, rich chunks of beef and vegetables and wine. My parents exclaimed how I was filling up the whole house with such rich smells. There is something indeed really special about filling up the house with a loving smell of simmering food. I am a foodie for sure, and I have found that it's a very sensual way of taking up all the space in the house. You put love into a pot, add a gentle flame, and then surrender to the process of transformation. And somehow, it fills up the whole house, this energetic field of nourishment and love of which I am a critical part. I love the meditation of cooking. You transform one thing into another. You take multiple ingredients, and somehow they turn into a unity that perhaps an onion and a carrot could not have otherwise imagined. Then, if you are lucky, you can share such love food with beloveds, and the deep aromas of stews that will linger in the house long after the meal is over. That's how love works. This resonance gently permeates so that the moment you open the front door, it greets you. Love, savory and nourishing, caressing you all, both unseen and everywhere. After hours of simmering, I declared that the meal was ready. My stepdad had set the table hours before in his wordless display of anticipation, so I poured the glasses of wine, reverently placed the food on the plates, and granted them to my parents with a flourish. To our stunned delight, my stepdad took his time eating. Usually, he inhales his food. Now he savored it, feeling the flavors in his mouth, tasting the thyme and the deep love it rested upon. My mom excitedly asked me questions about the recipe, the process. I told her what I could about the recipe, but the process? That's harder because it includes unnameable steps. Feeling into the timing of the food, knowing the exact moment the next step needs to begin, and infusing the recipe with love. Finally, as we sat back in our chairs, hands on our contented stomachs, my stepdad looked at me with sparkling eyes and said in his ritual exclamation, "I could eat that again."
Writer Crystal Chan brought you that story about the power of preparing a good meal. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Want to make sure you catch every Wisconsin Life story? Subscribe to our podcast. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I'm Mary Kate McCoy.
And now to a lab at UW-Stout and their intensive care work, as they put it, to revive and bring back lakes from the dead, one Wisconsin lake at a time. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. One big problem is excessive phosphorus runoff and algal blooms. Join in on lake health and how you work to improve the lake ecosystem. 800-642-1234. Bill James is here, Senior Researcher, Director of UW Stout Center for Limnological Research and Rehabilitation, also known as CLEAR. Retired senior lecturer at UW Stout, more than 30 years, was a research aquatic biologist with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers Research and Development Center. Bill, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you, Kate.
Good morning. Your center has been treating lakes now for over a decade, and you'll start rehabbing again this summer in Polk County. Can you walk us through some steps? How does CLEAR begin its rehab?
Sure. I think it all starts with diagnosis. We have to understand where the phosphorus is coming from. Is it coming from the watershed, or is it coming from internal sources, the sediment that's stored in the lake? So we actually monitor lakes. We go out every 2 weeks and collect samples for phosphorus and other variables. And we put a picture together with this data. And then that way we can understand what to manage. Do we manage the watershed, sources coming off the watershed, or do we manage the sediment that's stored in a lake?
Phosphorus, though, is essential for plant life, an essential nutrient for algae and aquatic plants. When does phosphorus then become bad for the water body, bad for the lake?
Yes, this is a great question. A lot of our lakes, just about all of our lakes in Wisconsin and Minnesota came from the glaciated period 10,000 years ago. There was very little runoff. These were pretty pristine watersheds with forests and prairies. Humans came along and we started clearing the land. Agricultural production started to fertilize the land, especially in the 30s and 40s. This sort of resulted in runoff. We didn't have that structure there to keep the soil in place. So over the past 50 to 70 years, soil that has been enriched in phosphorus has run off into our lakes. And this becomes stored in lakes. Recently, we've become really good at trying to prevent this runoff, but the sediment that's been stored for the past 70 years is coming back to haunt us. It's becoming recycled and moving back up into the water, and the algae can now take this phosphorus up, even though we may have reduced watershed inputs, and it can still use that phosphorus for growth. So we're finding that we have these horrendous algal blooms, you know, these nuisance algal blooms. Our lakes are pea green in the summer.
And they're toxic.
And they can be toxic as well. It's really become a serious problem.
Well, Wisconsin has thousands of lakes, and I know better than to throw out a number because that can get prickly depending on your criteria of what is a lake. But how do you choose which lakes to work on?
Well, we at CLEAR are an outreach center. So we developed the center lake districts, cities, counties, government agencies can contact us. And that's really where the process begins. And then we work with lake districts and governments to try to diagnose the problem and come up with a solution.
How long does that plan take? How long does it take to bring back a lake, to restore the balance?
Yes, it's quite an involved process. And in particular, we work with the DNR They provide lake planning grants that can be used to fund studies to diagnose lake problems. And once that's accomplished, we need a proof of concept. We need to know that what we're going to do, what we're going to manage, has a reasonable expectation of success. Because often lake management is millions of dollars, and it's very long term. Aquatic ecosystems are very complex, and it's the most complex unit of nature. And difficult to manage. It's difficult to push these lakes back into a better state, reverse what I call eutrophication or over-fertilization. So a process can take years to a decade or more. It's an ongoing process.
Are these long-term lake treatment plan prescriptions, if you will, are they purely chemical in nature, or are there other components in the rehab?
Well, we at CLEAR specifically work on lakes that have this internal phosphorus recycling issue. And this is very common. Under these conditions, this is mainly a chemical treatment. There are a lot of options out there. Specifically work using a chemical called aluminum sulfate, or alum. And, you know, alum is really, it's a common compound. Many of us have it in our spice racks in mm-hmm. the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
And it just so happens that alum can react with water to form aluminum hydroxide. And it's very inert, but it can act as a magnet to attract this phosphorus that's in the sediment and keep it in the sediment, keep it from becoming recycled. This is very similar to rust. You know, iron hydroxide is rust. Aluminum hydroxide is very similar.
We have the leader of UW Stout Center for Limnological Research and Rehabilitation. Bill James is here. His team travels around the state and Minnesota to clean up waters. Join in on this work of treating, reversing damage to lakes. What is happening on your lake? 800-642-1234. You're listening to The Morning Show. Back in a minute with Bill James here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation about long-term treatments for Wisconsin lakes, how to improve water quality so that lakes can be viable for recreation. The DNR says it's unable to test all reported blue-green algae blooms and to treat them with caution, as in stay out of the water when you spot them. Join in on lake water quality treatment approaches, 800-642-1234. Bill James is a senior researcher and director of UW Stout's Center for Limnological Research and Rehabilitation, goes by CLEAR, with us for about 9 more minutes. Bill, we were talking about alum there, and the criticism is that it's a short-term fix to a long-term problem, that if people don't change their ways in protecting the watershed, that, you know, you can't just rely on this fix forever.
Right, right. That's why it's very important to look at the overall picture. We have to understand that we have to change our behaviors. We have to reduce what we do on the land that promotes this runoff and phosphorus sedimentation in lakes. So it's very comprehensive. Once we do that, though, these in-lake fixes do become important, and then they can become long-term success stories. Hmm. Once we reduce watershed inputs, if we can, you know, bind that phosphorus in the sediment and keep it there, we can shift the lake to a clear water state, and we can keep it there. So that's the key, just this overall comprehensive stewardship of a lake.
Let's do this moment for a case study. Half Moon Lake in Polk County, prior to the treatment, you know, this was a murky, smelly, too green for swimming recreational uses. Now, water clarity is 5 feet deep, and you're going to be treating the lake again this summer. What happened to this lake?
Yes, and you know, there must be about five Half Moon Lakes in the state of Wisconsin. This one's actually in Eau Claire, and it's an oxbow lake. It's right in the center of town. It's just had a history of abuse. About 100 years ago, during the, you know, the peak of the logging industry, they used to shovel horse manure out on the ice in the winter and let it melt. Let the ice melt and this phosphorus input settle into the lake. You know, they did this for decades. And this came back to haunt the city. It just had terrible algal blooms. And it also had invasive aquatic plants. Recreation was impaired. A beautiful swimming beach couldn't be used. Boating was difficult. You know, imagine rowing through the weeds and that sort of thing. So this again was a huge process. It really started back in the 90s. The lake was diagnosed. We understood what the problems were and began to change behaviors and treat the lake. The first alum treatment was over 10 years ago, and we continue to beat back that internal phosphorus recycling. You know, the idea is to apply this at a low dose, but over a period of years, and this just action just slowly binds the phosphorus and keeps it in the sediment. And here we are, I think it's like four treatments later this year, and the lake is just responding so well. The beaches are being used again. Events are coming back. They have the Eau Claire Triathlon. You know, the first leg of swimming in Half Moon Lake. I mean, that's just been a huge success.
That's a landmark, sure. A landmark moment of being able absolutely to use a lake again. I want to ask you, I mean, you used the word beat back in terms of working with this phosphorus, this legacy phosphorus, if you will. But we're also trying to beat back invasive plants and invasive species like zebra mussels. What is the impact of those invasives on rehabbing a lake?
Right. Well, especially with shallow lakes, aquatic plants can be really invasive. We have a lot of aquatic plants that have been derived from Europe and Asia. Curly leaf pondweed is an amazing and invasive. It's very adaptive. It can just dominate a lake. It was brought over 100 years ago. And we've actually had to deal with that on Half Moon Lakes, as well as many other lakes in the state. And we do have treatments for that too. We use low dose herbicide treatments. And that sort of cuts into the life cycle of the plant. And what we're trying to do is prevent its successful reproduction. And we've been doing that on Half Moon Lake for over 10 years, and it's really, really been successful. We hardly have any curly leaf pondweed anymore. Zebra mussels, you're right. That's another big issue with our inland lakes. They're really starting to invade. You know, at first glance, they filter the water, they filter algae, but they do so selectively. They sort of promote cyanobacteria or blue-green algal growth, because blue-green algae, they're not palatable. You know, if a zebra mussel has a choice, they'd rather eat the more delicious diatoms and green algae, and they leave the cyanobacteria or the blue-green algae.
Picky.
Yeah.
Well, we are almost out of time, Bill, and I'm just wondering, do you have any tips or one tip in particular to help reduce phosphorus if you have a nearby lake or if you're a resident on a lake?
Yes, I think the most important thing is creating buffers between the shoreline and the property owner. A buffer can prevent runoff from the property. It can create habitat for plants and animals. It's a great stewardship thing to do.
Well, Bill, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Bill James, Senior Researcher, Director of UW-Stout's Center for Limnological Research and Rehabilitation. We have a link at wpr.org/mornings. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're with us on The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.